from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
1-2. Adbert fires. In the air, center field. Tuchman back. Back some more near the wall. And he caught it. What a goal.
Oh, yes, he did. Oh,
holy goodness. He saved the game. Mike Tuchman with a game-saving grab over the wall, and the Cubs win.
Cubs players are pouring onto the field as if they just won the pennant. That is spectacular by Mike Tuchman in center field. Wow. How about the way that ball game ended? The double play, and then Tuchman elevating over the wall to save the day.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
And you may ask yourself, why are we playing that? And you may say to yourself, it was 1 year ago today. That's why we're playing it. Our friend Jim DeShays joins us on Hit and Run right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Good morning, JD.
Hi, Spiegs. How are you today?
I'm good, man. A year ago today, that was quite a moment, wasn't it? It was pretty good.
That was exciting, yeah. That was a big moment. That was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. That was the culmination of an 8-game win streak, a streak that began when Pat Hughes went into the Hall of Fame and the Cubs had the good sense to hire me and Elise Menneker and Mike Esposito to do the radio broadcast. That was the first sweep of the Cardinals in Chicago. And,
okay. Yeah, I see where you're going with it. So you're claiming the fact that you were in the booth.
Yes.
Propelled the Cubs to that winning streak.
Yeah, that's 100% correct.
Okay.
And then
an
entire fan base can thank me and Elise and Mike Esposito for Jed then deciding to buy and giving them two more months of baseball relevance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But,
way to go, man.
Thanks, buddy. But then the whole thing fell apart in September. So that means I'm partially to blame for that if I'm going to carry this through. So
yeah,
I don't know what to do with that. Do you have any suggestions on what I do with
good. That? No, I think you just ride the wave of your short-term success and don't worry about the rest.
That's solid advice from Jim DeShays. You know what's fascinating to me about this week? Jed Hoyer comes out and says what he does, which feels like a concession speech. But the players weren't really told about it, nor was the manager voicing that at all. The next day, he was like, nothing has changed. I still think we're good enough to do it. And like, even if they make trades here and stuff, the calendar says that they can't quit. That's not how it works, is it?
Right. So we're operating on two different levels here. There's the front office kind of looking at things with a clear eye and saying, well, we're not going to trade prospects for rental players because we're not in a position to do so. But there's also the reality that there's some historical precedence that says teams have made furious rallies late in the year and made the postseason. So that's I think, where the manager's coming from, that the possibility of that is still in play. There's a whole lot of historical precedence that's not likely to happen. But if you're the managers and the players, you have to operate on, you know, on that level that, hey, we're not giving up. We're going to go out and play. We've got whatever, 56 games or whatever is left. We need to go on a heck of a run here. But as they've said all year long, they believe they can do it. So that's how they operate. And the front office has to be a little more, separated from that in terms of their thinking and with a broader view of what's coming around the corner in the next 2 or 3 seasons. So I think that's where Jed's coming from. He's not going to do anything to acquire a rental player when the chances of them getting to postseason are, you know, very slim.
You know, I think it's crazy to think that as far as you know, a lot of us are into watching the game and to thinking about the game and to covering the game, there's still that basic level of disconnect that exists, you know? And it's like, do you think that a GM or a baseball boss should go into a clubhouse and tell a team what their plans are? Or do they not, and just let that sort of be detached and let the manager be the conduit in that way?
Yeah, the latter. I don't think the front office needs to go in and explain itself to the players. The players are not dumb. They know what's going on. They know that they said it heading into the All-Star break. We need to get on a roll here. We have to convince Jed to go out and acquire players to make us better. They didn't do that. So they understand where Jed's coming from. I think as a player, too, I don't think anybody in that clubhouse is going to be upset that the front office didn't aggressively pursue a help at the trade deadline this year for this year. They just haven't. The players have not put the team in a position to do that. So they understand where Jed's coming from. At the same time, they still have to have some belief, some level of belief, that they can pull this off, because that's the nature of sport. You know, there's always a chance until the numbers tell you otherwise.
Jim Deshaies is with us on 670 The Score. I know you're not on the broadcast this weekend. You watching the games?
I'm keeping an eye on the games, you know, the games in Paris, the games in Kansas City.
yes.
Whatever else games are going on out there, I'm paying attention.
Good for you.
How about Patrick Wisdom last night? That was awesome. I'm really happy for him.
I don't understand why Matt Quatraro takes out Seth Lugo when Pete Crow Armstrong is coming up. Because what? Pete Crow Armstrong hit a ball hard and tripled? Like, it was the most obvious counter, and a great counter to give Wisdom that moment against a lefty. It was just, I don't get it, frankly.
I don't know. I don't know where Lugo was pitch count wise.
Sure.
You know, we can get into the whole third time through the order, the whole platoon advantage, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very much a gray guy, Speaks. I think there's very little black and white in this game. We tend to evaluate moves after the fact. It's like, oh man, what was he thinking? And then, if you were to have a conversation with a manager or a bench coach, before a decision is made, you probably would go, oh yeah, I can see that. You know, if the outcome is a certain way, then you go, oh, what a boneheaded move. That's the beauty of being a baseball fan. The second guessing is part of it. That's a big part of it.
Yeah, no, it's a delight. The second guessing is a delight, and it's created the very job from which I speak to you now, Jim. that is for damn sure. Look, Seiya Suzuki is a very good hitter, and when he goes boom last night, when he goes boom in general, it is so essential. And to do it early, it's a big deal last night, obviously, and just in general, it's essential. I'm struggling with him as a defender, and I don't know that there's any fault on the Cubs for not scouting it or finding it from Japan, and I don't really know what it's about. Some of the struggles. Friday night there was a play, got a late read on a fly ball, might have been able to come in and get it, and that began the torrent of what I think was five straight two out hits against Kyle Hendricks that led to the 3-run homer by Salvi Perez. And obviously Kyle's got to bear down at that point, but he'd been so good to that point. But I don't know. Do you have any clue as to why the defense has been a struggle for Seiya?
I think here's the pop psychologist in me. I think there's a little bit of a mental thing, almost like a yippy thing going on with him, because he is capable of making plays out there, and he's made some really good plays. Craig Counsell spoke to that after the game. Like, some of the advanced metrics, you know, say he's been a plus outfielder this year, but there's been a number of like, what was that plays over the last couple seasons. And I think there's a little bit of a confidence issue perhaps going on with Seiya. So it causes him to maybe, make bad reads, make some bad plays at very unfortunate times. Mm. And I don't put it down to scouting, because he won, I guess they call them golden gloves over Japan. I think he won like 5 golden gloves over there. I know last year there was a little bit of an issue, or maybe it was 2 years ago, with jumps. They didn't think he was getting good jumps in the outfield, but he worked to improve that and has been much better at that. So, the kind of misreads and more importantly, just the clanks, a very catchable ball that's off the glove or, loses it in the lights or whatever. That happens. That's part of it. But Yeah, it's a little bit of a mystery.
You know, it's instructive because I don't know what your particular favorite defensive metric is. That's good cocktail conversation, by the way. It's like, hey, what's your favorite defensive metric? But none of them are great. I got to admit, like, I like defensive runs saved. I like John DeJuan and Baseball Info Solutions, who invented it. But say is a +3 in defensive run save. That's actually pretty good. And I don't buy it. And this really isn't about Saya, but it's about the effect. I guess there's nothing to measure. The effect on a given inning and also the effect on the humans. Like when I see Justin Steele pointing at second base after Saya makes the throw to first behind Gabby Moreno last week against the Diamondbacks. You know, as a pitcher, I mean, it's got to drive you nuts, and you never want to show up your players and say anything bad, and everybody's been supportive, but it can have an effect on a human level, can it, some of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think pitchers, sometimes we get a little frustrated when plays aren't made behind us, and we vent a little bit. It's your job as a professional to kind of turn the page on that as quickly as possible. And if it happens time and time again, then obviously that becomes a bigger issue. I don't think we're there yet with Saya. I mean, it's, you know, you hope you can get things turned around and play a pristine at outfield. But and you could hear from Kyle. And Kyle never says anything, but you could, in his comments after the game, he said something like, I thought I made the pitches there to get the outs. You know, I thought I was out of the inning. That's as close as Kyle will ever get to, you know, kind of tossing a teammate under the bus a little bit. And obviously he's having a rough year and is very frustrated. you vent a little bit, and that's what managers and coaches and teammates are there for, to kind of pick each other up. And I'm sure Saya probably said something to Kyle at some point. As a pitcher, sometimes you don't want to hear it. Just a lot of times you're thinking, don't apologize, just make the play. But that stuff is usually pretty quickly forgotten, and you move on. I suspect there's no lingering issues because of that play.
Jim, what's different about Jameson Taillon, if you see anything? I'm trying to look in the pitch mix to see if there's – because there were times last year and even earlier this year where it's like, wow, everything's right around the same speed. That's dangerous. And then, I don't know if anything has changed, or is just the success different? Is the location different? What have you seen? Because, boy, it's been good.
I think two things. I think the cutter and the lefties has been a good weapon for him. And I think early in maybe last year, he was making some more mistakes with that pitch and leaving it out over the plate, and lefties were doing some damage on it. I think he's gotten better about having the ability to throw that ball in on their hands and having the confidence to throw it in there. And J-Mo's, the more I watch him, the more I appreciate him. He's a percentage pitcher. And what I mean by that is, when you take the broad view, he throws a ton of strikes, a lot of first pitch strikes, pounds the strike zone. So every now and then he's going to have a game where he just gives it up, where he's throwing it over so much, and you're thinking, well, I wish he'd be a little more particular. I wish he'd be a little less aggressive. But it has a negative impact in that game. And then you watch the next five starts, and you go, okay, I get it. He's throwing a ton of strikes. He's getting quick outs. The ball's in play early. He's efficient. It allows him to pitch deep into games. And I think that's what we've seen play out over the course of the last couple of years now. You've seen this whole body of work where, and especially early last year, there was some really ugly outings. And then it just, all the strike throwing has paid off. And again, the cutter in and the breaking stuff has been really good. He's just a good, solid major league pitcher.
Last thing for you, Jim, this is random. I know, but, Randy Johnson was being asked, I love talking about pitching and guys from our shared past. Randy Johnson was being asked about the bird that he hit. And where's this from, Sean? Where did you grab this from?
This is from Diamondbacks broadcast, actually. This is him getting interviewed in the booth.
Okay.
People go, hey, aren't you the pitcher that hit the bird?
That's it, right?
And I look at him and I go, I played 22 years and I've done a lot more than just kill a bird.
I got to say, that'd be the first thing I ask him about, though, as well. How about you?
Yeah, well, isn't that part of that interview or somewhere I saw? He's a photographer now.
Yes.
And I think the logo for his company is like a bird with its feathers flying off of it or something like that, because he blew up that bird. I mean, yeah, I don't know if it's the first thing I ask him, but it's definitely coming up in the conversation.
Oh, for sure.
If it doesn't, he walks out of your studio or out of our booth and you're looking, why didn't we ask him about the bird? We gotta talk to him about the bird.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, he might enjoy it if you don't ask him about the bird, but how do you not?
Have to ask him about the bird.
Yeah, I would ask him, too, about – this would be the end of the conversation. I'd ask him about the night that he and Jack McDowell got in a fight at a Soundgarden show at a Seattle nightclub. But I think that probably ends the conversation. So
I don't know, but you might get some good stuff there.
That's right.
I wasn't familiar with that story.
Oh, yeah.
He was with us in Houston when I was working down there years ago, 98. You may recall they traded for him. And he went like 10-1 with a 190-something ERA. It was just brilliant. And wow. Bagwell used to tell a story how we weren't giving him run support for whatever reason. And pitchers, they get mad when that happens. And Baggy said that Randy used to just scream at everybody in the dugout, "Let's go, get some runs, come on, you know, shake yourself." And finally Jeff went up to him after one of the games. "Hey, Randy, would you mind yelling at us when we're not facing Kevin Brown? You know, when we have a fighting chance, you know, feel free to yell at us then. But you know, when Kevin Brown's out there, no yelling allowed."
I forgot that, of course, that you're broadcasting the Astros game. That's one of the all time deadline deals. I still remember it's Freddie Garcia, Carlos Guillen, and John Halama. Was the trade. How and what effect did you see that have on that Astros team?
Well, like I said, he pitched brilliantly. And it was one of those things that everybody was, you know, all in on. And, you know, Jerry Hunsicker pulled off the deal and the whole city was, you know, going crazy. And then he lived up to the deal. It was, you know, obviously they gave away a lot of talent, but he was brilliant. Tried to re-sign him, and obviously that didn't work out. But yeah, there was kind of a big unit mania going on in Houston at the time. They were selling like this 2-foot-long hot dog called the Big Unit Dog, or something like that. So yeah, it was a really good team that they got eliminated by the Padres in the LCS.
Jim DeShays, thanks for the time. Even when you're off for the series, you're a good man. Appreciate it. See you around.
Always good to be with Spigs.
All right, buddy. It's Jim DeShays right there from the Marquee Sports Network. Okay. We haven't taken a single call yet. It's a Sunday morning. I love talking to you people. There's a wide variety of topics on the table that have already been discussed. But let me go ahead and set the table as we open the phone line for you. Even though I said there are topics on the table, let me put them in a good particular order. For the White Sox fans, where are you? Any excitement at the idea of A.J. Pierzynski as your manager next year for a new batch of kids that are brought in via trade as well as the pieces that you're seeing? So is there excitement there? Also, I want to know, is there any part of you that would like to see them break the record for the Mets and the worst season in MLB history? Any part of you that wants to see them go ahead and get that done? I'm interested in that. Obviously, your trade deadline stuff as well. For the Cubs, any part of you that is with Rick Sutcliffe saying that it's now or never?
Well, it's just my opinion, but tonight it's now or never.
Yeah, I mean, never kind of is in the lead. Now I thought had left town, but Sut is still believing in now. So, you know, any part of you that believes in that? And then here's another one for Cubs fans. Is there anybody you're willing to trade at this point that you weren't even considering as somebody you would have wanted to trade a month ago? So now that you look, okay, if we're really going to try and shake up this mix, I guess I would trade X. I want to know who's in your thoughts on that. So wide array of topics, phone lines wide open. Let's chat. Let's talk baseball on a Sunday morning on Hit and Run. 312-644-6767. Be listening to 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Listen, the farther and farther I get away from 2005, the more and more I appreciate A.J. Pierzynski and what he did and how he played and what he brought. A.J.'s a bright kid, a bright guy. You could put it in a lot of other people's hands, it wouldn't be as fast. I like the idea, is what I'm saying. I like the idea that you just brought up.
That is Don Cooper in a visit with Parkins and Spiegel from 2022 on the idea of A.J. Pierzynski as a manager. If you are just joining us or have not read Bob Nightingale Today, here it is in the USA Today from this morning. Former All-Star catcher A.J. Pierzynski has quietly emerged as a serious candidate to manage the Chicago White Sox in 2025 if they dismiss manager Pedro Grifol after the season, as expected. And A.J. on with Mully and Haw in April said, that would be fun. Haven't been asked, but that would be fun. I'd enjoy that. I like my jobs I have now, blah, 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 blah. Sounded like a guy who would take the job if he was offered the job. Interesting. Your thoughts on that, on many other White Sox topics, on Cubs topics as well. We've asked for phone calls, and boy, do we have phone calls. I love talking to you on a Sunday morning. Let's start with Mark in South Bend on the Score. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Spiegs? Always great to chime in with you. I got a few things. It's going to take me about 20 seconds to explain, and I'll listen to your answer. New York Yankee announcer job on radio, I would say Len Casper might be lined up for an interview on that one. I say with A.J. going to the White Sox, I would not jump on it for a couple years. As a matter of fact, A.J. might have chances to manage at other places, maybe even for the Cubs in 4 or 5 years. If Mr. Counselor don't work out. Now, the last thing is, Tom Hamilton, your good associates with the Cleveland Indians play-by-play announcer, did you ever ask him when the Cleveland Guardians changed their name from the Indians, how was that decided? And why would you not in Cleveland, is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as you well know, and they should have named themselves the Cleveland Rockers.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark, for your collection of thoughts. I'm a no on Casper to the Yankees. There's no association, and he loves living here. I'm a no on AJ ever managing the Cubs because he doesn't like that place. I just don't think that's a fit. And on the Guardians, I forget. There is something. There's something related to Cleveland, but it's neither here nor there. But thank you for your thoughts and your call and your listenership. Owen is in Willowbrook and is now on the Score. Good morning, Owen.
Hey, Matt, a couple answers to your questions. It wouldn't bother me if the Sox, broke the Mets' old record because it would just highlight the fact that this current ownership, and I'm not going to put it on guests, but how incompetent they've been. And I think A.J. Pierzynski, who was the smartest baseball player on that 2005 team, would be perfect. And it would remind me of the fact that he was like Ozzy. Ozzy knew baseball better than anybody in that organization. And he forced Kenny Williams' hand to go get Scott Pesednik.
Yep.
And I don't think AJ would want to just wait 5 years for a rebuild. The Texas Rangers last year won the World Series. The year before, they finished 28 games under 500. We need ownership to get lit, have something lit underneath them. And AJ Pierzynski would do it.
All right, look, let's talk about the AJ part, and I think you make a great point that the Sox need guys that are smarter than the organization to come in. And that has been true for front office people, but they don't usually do that. They usually promote from within. I love Brian Bannister. I think that guy's awesome. And I think things are looking up for the overall pitching outlook for the entire organization, in part because of Brian Bannister. AJ as a comp for Ozzy, hell yes, with the attitude and the edge and the smarter than the org, probably at this point, been a national broadcaster now. Foul territory has turned into an amazing thing very, very quickly, talking to a lot of people around the game, knows a lot of stuff, and of course played at a high level for a bunch of different organizations. And he would challenge Chris Getz. I mean, the Ozzy comp to Kenny Williams in terms of the relationship piece is a really clean one for AJ and Chris Getz. Now, in terms of doing something quickly and daring to reference the Texas Rangers, that team spent half a billion dollars on Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. And the next year spent like $300 million on Jacob deGrom and John Gray and Nate Eovaldi. And I could have the timing wrong. I know they spent nearly $1 billion in combined contracts on some heavy, heavy hitters and then won the World Series. That's not the model. That's not the model. But in terms of the quickness of a turnaround, it's certainly something to consider that it can be done perhaps a little quicker than the lengthy rebuild that we have seen in the past. I mean, it's nice to dream on, but it's hard to do. It's very hard to do. But that, I think, will lead us to this conversation I've been dreading with Ron from the South Side. I've been dreading talking to you, Ron. I've been dreading it, my friend. Ron, good morning. You're on Hitting
Hey, Run. Good morning, Speed. Going out to see Gear Crochet today, hopefully for the last time.
See, yeah, for those who don't know, yeah, yes, Garrett Crochet pitching today. And Ron has been calling me every week to try and tell me that they should trade Garrett Crochet. Trying to change my mind on Garrett Crochet, right?
Right. Yeah. And I keep trying. And so hope, like I said, this will be his. But I did want to ask you, though. Oh, and first of all, regarding AJ, just no.
Yeah.
No.
Well, okay, tell me why no.
Because, you know, I want an experienced manager. We just went through this, and I hear all the descriptions of he's very smart. It reminds me of Grifold, and he was a great communicator. I want to see someone with some manager experience. Now, bring him on as a coach. And then, okay, Vince, but no. And then it's just a lot of antics. No. I don't want him. Another one, Ozzie back. None of that. Time to move on. So, but I wanted to ask you, because you might get your way. Does it complicate things with Crochet now that he has said that he wants an extension, even though, you know, he can't deny a trade, block a trade? So maybe just comment on that. How do you think that's complete? I do think it may complicate things, but he can't block a trade and can't make those kind of demands. He can ask, but it doesn't have to be given. So maybe you can comment on that for me, Steve.
Thanks, Ron. It's a big-time complication. It absolutely is, because it was referenced as a complication over the past couple months in kind of abstract terms. You remember this? And people be like, well, it's hard to tell, you know, what kind of value there is for Crochet, because you don't know whether he will be able to pitch in September and October, because he's never done this. And maybe they'd have to turn him into a reliever and that kind of stuff. And then it became, all right, no, maybe teams will trade it because they could turn him into a reliever and use him like Andrew Miller during this run. And then he could be a starter again next year and all of that. But then Crochet's camp that has now said that if he's traded, he'd like to have a contract extension. And that if he is traded, not only does he want a contract extension, but he won't pitch in the postseason if he doesn't get an extension. And as Nightingale writes today, you can imagine the White Sox's rage, considering they had not been informed of that demand until it became public. So the Sox didn't know that Crochet was saying that to anybody until he leaked it, till his agent leaked it to the media? Wow. Wow, that is a power play of the highest order from a baseball pitcher. And now teams are scared off. But Nightingale writes, teams like the Dodgers are unfazed, and they wonder if it's nothing more than a negotiating ploy. You really think Crochet is going to walk into a clubhouse and say, sorry, boys, I'm sitting this one out? So teams are assuming that Crochet will bend to the will of teammates on a new team, even if he talks a big game as a negotiating ploy. That is, it's a lot to assume for any kind of acquiring team. I could see it not scaring the Dodgers, thinking that, look, he's not going to get here, and Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Shohei are looking at you. But if you're the Orioles, do you wonder whether Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman pack the same power? They might, but they might not. You're really going to give up the farm, the entire farm, according to Lou Kanellis, for a guy that you then have to pressure and convince? I think he's still going to get traded. And I got to tell you, Ron, this is why I was dreading the phone call, because I understand. And I would begrudgingly accept Crochet being traded more than I would have last week or the week before. I've been worn down a little bit. I'm not all the way there, but I'm pretty damn close to being there to say, okay, fine. And I'll tell you why. I got a couple different reasons when we come back. We'll keep taking your phone calls for much of the rest of Hit and Run. So dial it up and get involved if you want it, 312-644-6767. But when we come back, hear from a White Sox legend in the booth on the trade deadline, and I'll explain to you why I am weakening with my stance of not wanting them to trade Crochet, who I do believe is an ace that you have drafted and unleashed. But we'll talk about it next, and more of your phone calls on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Have you seen, I know you worked with Andrew Vaughn this offseason. I saw you brought him over to your house and you had a nice hitting session with him. Have you seen anything out of him or any of these White Sox hitters that are going to be around? Like, they're not going to trade an Andrew Vaughn, you know, Brooks Baldwin, the second baseman, or you know, even probably Luis Robert Jr. But is there anything you look for in young hitters to say, they got a chance to be something special?
He's been swinging it great. I mean, he's going on probably a good 30 or 40 game clip of swinging it really, really well.
It's Paul Konerko in the booth on Fox yesterday with AJ Pruszynski talking about the White Sox. All right, I want to hear this. It's Matt Spiegler with you. Your call's coming. My admission of a bend on the Crochet thing in a minute. Let's hear from Paul Konerko on whether he would trade Crochet and Robert at this deadline for the woefully horrific Chicago White Sox.
Would you, as a fan, do you want him to trade Crochet? Do you want him to trade Luis Robert Jr.? Do you want him to trade Eric Fetty, who's pitching tonight?
I think as a knowledgeable fan, looking at where the team's at and looking what you could probably get for those guys in the form of bona fide, you know, young players that are probably under a lot of team control that you can bring in here that are, you know, just about ready to go and be good big leaguers. I think, you know, I would because possibly, like I said, I think they can be good even if it's in a year from now or 2 years from now. Crochet is still a young guy and he could be a big part of that. But if it were to take longer, I mean, again, just looking at it from a fan's perspective, is by the time they would be getting good, he would be kind of going out the door. So what good is that? You might as well capitalize on it now. But this is why they pay Getsy the big bucks, you know. But I think the name of it is, if you look at teams, again, as a fan, I watch a lot of baseball. You're looking to get, like, dynamic, athletic players, you know, that you look at all these teams that are doing well. And if you you know, if you bring in guys that look like that, you know, you can start to build on that. And it's definitely a puzzle to figure out. But that's where it's at now. And you just got to, you know, roll up your sleeves and get it done.
So Paul Konerko would do it. Here's the sad reality that I've come to sit with this week.
But you're disagreeing with Paul Konerko?
No, that doesn't feel great. He's a thoughtful guy. The thing is, because I've said the reasons why I would not trade Crochet, because I believe he is an ace. I believe that, yes, they should pay him, and he's probably the only one of those young pitchers you'll have to pay. And I believe he's got all the intangibles as well as the tangibles about being a real true ace, and there's nothing more valuable than that. But you're at a deadline here where there's very few active sellers who are going to be willing to give up somebody that good. Like, he's number one. He is number one. Because I don't think the Tigers are going to trade Tarik Skubal because they feel like they're closer. Hell, they might even, you know, have a shot this year. So he is far and away number one. But here's the real the truth that sunk into me. It takes a lot longer than it used to do a rebuild in MLB. It, you know, we used to think, oh, 5 years, the perfect Cubs plan of 5 years. The Astros, I think, took six, but even that, you're like, oh, look at that. But now with the way the draft has changed, I mean, go back to when the Nationals were tanking and they used number one overall picks on Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg, eventually won a World Series. Go back to when the Astros were tanking and they used a number one overall on Carlos Correa. Go back to when the Cubs were tanking and they used a number two pick on Chris Bryant and a number four pick on Kyle Schwarber. And those guys helped them win a World Series. And now understand that the White Sox might break the record for the worst record ever and they pick 10th next year. And I've thought about that in a one-year sample, but I don't think I really gave that full context and thought in terms of a five-year rebuild now becoming maybe a seven-year rebuild, because that's how the world can work and how much smarter you have to be. I mean, even just this year, Hagan Smith was what, number five overall? And it's a different guarantee than having number one overall. It's a different ceiling. And I think I got to admit that they're really far away, and I knew that, but that they're even further away because of the systemic change to the game that has come at a tough time for them. So with that confluence of factors, very few aggressive GMs, very few GMs with jewels as good as Crochet, and the fact that it takes longer, I think I'd have to bite the bullet and do it. And I would hope that the Orioles would give you three athletic high-end position players. One that's ready like Heston Kjerstad, one that's a little lower like Samuel Basalo, and then one that's way lower but still gets something. Go ahead and get three position players of potential consequence. If you can get that, I guess I'd probably do it. And I'm grumpy about having caved a bit here. I'm grumpy. I don't like it. I do like taking your phone calls. Don is in Tinley Park on 670 The Score. Good morning, Don. You're on Hit and Run.
Hi, Spiggs. Maybe I'll cheer you up a little bit with this trade proposal.
Okay.
The Cubs have 7 to 8 top 100 prospects, mostly in the upper half, a few in the bottom half of the 100. But regardless, you could do a 6 for 2, and you could steal Luis Robert and Crochet, bench Crochet for the rest of the year, because now you could be able to trade Cade Horton and give Cade Horton to the White Sox. Yeah, I know he's hurt, but is his injury unsustainable? He's not coming back? Or
What do you think about that?
I think
he'll be back. I think that you are excited and you are ravenous here at the deadline, and you, my friend, might be a spirit animal of Jerry DePoto and A.J. Preller. Trade 6 prospects for Crochet and Robert. Here's the thing. I don't want Luis Robert. If I'm the Cubs, I don't want Luis Robert. That is a guy, woo, does he chase, and he will forever chase. Sometimes he forgets to throw the ball in when the winning run is about to score from third base. Sometimes he doesn't bother to make a throw like that. Doesn't even get under the ball correctly. Okay? That's not somebody I'm interested in. Good for you. Have some fun. Sean, would you like to respond about the 6 for 2 trade?
I mean, Don did preface it by saying I might be crazy before he told me it.
Okay, want him to stop there?
I agreed, okay. But, you know, it was fun. I enjoyed it.
All right. Let's go to John in O'Fallon, Illinois on 670 The Score. Hello, John.
Hey, hello. How are you doing?
Wonderful.
Okay. What I wanted to ask about is more your thoughts on this. AJ Pierzynski comes in as a manager. You have your general manager's on his second year. You made the comment how Ozzie pushed back on his general manager. I think AJ might run over his general manager. And the problem is the ownership doesn't get rid of guys. So will they keep Chris Getz, or will AJ come in and look around and say, hey, I really need somebody else to work with? And then all of a sudden the owner goes, well, that's not how we do it here. We let guys stay here for a while.
Yeah, no, I don't think they would do that. I don't think that Chris Getz would be in danger if AJ comes in. I mean, look, the manager is not, should not be atop the food chain for the White Sox. It should be a baseball boss. It's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, you could see that kind of coup being tried theoretically, but more than likely you get guys who know each other and are going to argue about stuff, and that's good. That's healthy. It was good that Ozzie and Kenny pushed back on each other. That's good. I think one of the smaller problems on the Cubs this year is the loss of David Ross pushing back on Jed in terms of two-strike approach and stuff like that. You know, I don't know how much counsel's pushing back on Jed, and maybe he will do it more as we go on here, but I don't know. To me, it seems like you've got an overall offensive approach of you wait for the three-run homer, wait for the three-run homer, when, you know, you need some dudes in a lineup who can scrape and scrap their way on base.
But then you also end up with, like, Eric Hosmer on the roster for, like, maybe a couple months longer than you want him to.
Right? That's true. That's true. So there's negatives. There's negatives in that regard. And there's negatives in terms of playing time, in terms of a manager not being on the same page. So I get it. I get it. But you do want to – you need a certain amount of pushback. It's a delicate balance. So I don't know. It'd be interesting. It sure would be fun to watch. I bet Joe Cali would want to get back on the White Sox beat because he documented the Ozzy and Kenny stuff. Oh boy, he picked a dog in that fight and documented that. That kind of fight would be available again with AJ and Getz. It could be entertaining. Look, I haven't fully capitulated on the Garrett Crochet thing. Okay, it's not a full capitulation. I'm just saying I see the wisdom now. I understand.
These caveats, okay.
I'm struggling, okay?
It's okay.
Some score colleagues are texting me and chiding me for not holding my ground in full. It's a complicated sport, people. It's complicated. It's nuanced. Sometimes new information becomes available. Sometimes new callers are available, and we'll be engaged in conversation next hour right here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
1-2. Anbert fires. In the air, center field. Tuchman back. Back some more near the wall. And he caught it! What a goal!
Oh, yes, he did. Oh,
holy
my
cow.
Goodness.
He saved the game. Mike Tuchman with a game-saving grab over the wall. And the Cubs win.
Cup players are pouring onto the field as if they just won the pennant. That is spectacular by Mike Tuchman in center field. Wow. How about the way that ball game ended? The double play and then Tuchman elevating over the wall to save the day.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
And you may ask yourself, why are we playing that? And you may say to yourself, it was 1 year ago today. That's why we're playing it. Our friend Jim DeShays joins us on Hit and Run right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Good morning, JD.
Hi, Spiggs. How are you today?
I'm good, man. A year ago today, that was quite a moment, wasn't it? It was pretty good.
That was exciting, yeah. That was a big moment. That was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. That was the culmination of an 8-game win streak. A streak that began when Pat Hughes went into the Hall of Fame and the Cubs had the good sense to hire me and Elise Menneker and Mike Esposito to do the radio broadcast. That was the first sweep of the Cardinals in Chicago. And
okay. Yeah, I see where you're going with it. So you're claiming the fact that you were in the booth.
Yes.
Propelled the Cubs to that winning streak.
Yeah, that's 100% correct.
Okay.
And then
okay, I get it.
And then an entire fan base can thank me and Elise and Mike Esposito. For Jed then deciding to buy and giving them 2 more months of baseball relevance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But,
way to go, man.
Thanks, buddy. But then the whole thing fell apart in September. So that means I'm partially to blame for that if I'm going to carry this through. So
yeah,
I don't know what to do with that. Do you have any suggestions on what
no,
I do?
You're
with
good.
That?
No, I think you just ride the wave of your short-term success and don't worry about the rest.
That's solid advice from Jim DeShays. You know what's fascinating to me about this week? Jed Hoyer comes out and says what he does, which feels like a concession speech. But the players weren't really told about it, nor was the manager voicing that at all. The next day, he was like, "I nothing has changed. I still think we're good enough to do it." And like, even if they make trades here and stuff, the calendar says that they can't quit. That's not how it works, is it?
Right. So we're operating on two different levels here. There's the front office kind of looking at things with a clear eye and saying, well, we're not going to trade prospects for rental players because we're not in a position to do so. But there's also the reality that there's some historical precedence that says teams have made furious rallies late in the year and made the postseason. So that's I think, where the manager's coming from, that the possibility of that is still in play. There's a whole lot of historical precedence that's not likely to happen. But if you're the managers and the players, you have to operate on, you know, on that level that, hey, we're not giving up. We're going to go out and play. We've got whatever 56 games or whatever is left. We need to go on a heck of a run here. But as they've said all year long, they believe they can do it. So that's how they operate. And the front office has to be a little more, separated from that in terms of their thinking and with a broader view of what's coming around the corner in the next two or three seasons. So I think that's where Jed's coming from. He's just, he's not going to do anything to acquire a rental player when the chances of them getting the postseason are, very slim.
I think it's crazy to think that as far as a lot of us are into watching the game and to thinking about the game and to covering the game, there's still that basic level of disconnect that exists, And it's like, do you think that a GM or a baseball boss should go into a clubhouse and tell a team what their plans are? Or do they not, and just let that sort of be detached and let the manager be the conduit in that way?
Yeah, the latter. I don't think the front office needs to go in and explain itself to the players. The players are not dumb. They know what's going on. They know that they said it heading into the All-Star break. We need to get on a roll here. We have to convince Jed to go out and acquire players to make us better. They didn't do that. So they understand where Jed's coming from. I think as a player, too, I don't think anybody in that clubhouse is going to be upset that the front office didn't aggressively pursue a help at the trade deadline this year for this year. They just haven't. The players have not put the team in a position to do that. So they understand where Jed's coming from. At the same time, they still have to have some belief, some level of belief, that they can pull this off, because that's the nature of sport. There's always a chance until the numbers tell you otherwise.
Jim Deshaies is with us on 670 The Score. I know you're not on the broadcast this weekend. You watching the games?
I'm keeping an eye on the games, the games in Paris, the games in Kansas City.
yes.
Whatever else games are going on out there, I'm paying attention.
Good for you.
How about Patrick Wisdom last night? That was awesome. I'm really happy for him.
I don't understand why Matt Quatraro takes out Seth Lugo when Pete Crow Armstrong is coming up, because what? Pete Crow Armstrong hit a ball hard and tripled? Like, it was the most obvious counter, and a great counter to give Wisdom that moment against a lefty. It was just, I don't get it, frankly.
I don't know. I don't know where Lugo was pitch count wise.
Sure.
We can get into the whole third time through the order, the whole platoon advantage, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very much a gray guy, Speaks. I think there's very little black and white in this game. We tend to evaluate moves after the fact. It's like, oh man, what was he thinking? And then if you were to have a conversation with a manager or a bench coach before a decision is made, you probably would go, oh yeah, I can see that. If the outcome is a certain way, then you go, oh, what a boneheaded move. That's the beauty of being a baseball fan. The second guessing is part of it. That's a big part of it.
Yeah, no, it's a delight. The second guessing is a delight, and it's created the very job from which I speak to you now, Jim. that is for damn sure. Look, Seiya Suzuki is a very good hitter, and when he goes boom last night, when he goes boom in general, it is so essential. And to do it early, it's a big deal last night, obviously, and just in general, it's essential. I'm struggling with him as a defender, and I don't know that there's any fault on the Cubs for not scouting it or finding it from Japan, and I don't really know what it's about. Some of the struggles. Friday night there was a play, got a late read on a fly ball, might have been able to come in and get it, and that began the torrent of what I think was five straight two-out hits against Kyle Hendricks that led to the three-run homer by Salvi Perez. And obviously, Kyle's got to bear down at that point, but he'd been so good to that point. But I don't know. Do you have any clue as to why the defense has been a struggle for Saya?
I think, here's the pop psychologist in me. I think there's a little bit of a mental thing, almost like a yippee thing going on with him, because he is capable of making plays out there, and he's made some really good plays. Craig Counsell spoke to that after the game. Like, some of the advanced metrics, say he's been a plus outfielder this year. But there's been a number of, like, what was that plays over the last couple seasons. And I think there's a little bit of a confidence issue, perhaps, going on with Saya. So it causes him to maybe, make bad reads, make some bad plays at very unfortunate times. Mm-hmm. I don't put it down to scouting, because he won, I guess they call them golden gloves over Japan. I think he won like 5 golden gloves over there. I know last year there was a little bit of an issue, or maybe it was 2 years ago, with jumps. They didn't think he was getting good jumps in the outfield, but he worked to improve that and has been much better at that. So, the kind of misreads and more importantly, just the clanks, a very catchable ball that's off the glove or, loses it in the lights or whatever. And that happens. That's part of it. But yeah, it's a little bit of a mystery.
It's instructive, because I don't know what your particular favorite defensive metric is. That's good cocktail conversation, by the way. It's like, hey, what's your favorite defensive metric? None of them are great. I got to admit, I like defensive runs saved. I like John DeJuan and Baseball Info Solutions, who invented it. But Say is a +3 in defensive runs saved. That's actually pretty good. And I don't buy it. And this really isn't about Saya, but it's about the effect. I guess there's nothing to measure. The effect on a given inning, and also the effect on the humans. Like, when I see Justin Steele pointing at second base after Saya makes the throw to first behind Gabby Moreno last week against the Diamondbacks, as a pitcher, I mean, it's got to drive you nuts, and you never want to show up your players and say anything bad, and everybody's been supportive, but it can have an effect on a human level, can it, some of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think pitchers, sometimes we get a little frustrated when plays aren't made behind us and we vent a little bit. It's your job as a professional to kind of turn the page on that as quickly as possible. And if it happens time and time again, then obviously that becomes a bigger issue. I don't think we're there yet with Saya. I mean, it's, you hope he can get things turned around and play a pristine outfield. But and you could hear from Kyle. And Kyle never says anything, but you could, in his comments after the game, he said something like, I thought I made the pitches there to get the outs. I thought I was out of the inning. That's as close as Kyle will ever get to, kind of tossing a teammate under the bus a little bit. And obviously he's having a rough year and is very frustrated. you vent a little bit, and that's what managers and coaches and teammates are there for, to kind of pick each other up. And I'm sure Saya probably said something to Kyle at some point. As a pitcher, sometimes you don't want to hear it. Just a lot of times you're thinking, don't apologize, just make the play. But that stuff is usually pretty quickly forgotten, and you move on. I suspect there's no lingering issues because of that play.
Jim, what's different about Jameson Taillon, if you see anything? I'm trying to look in the pitch mix to see if there's, because there were times last year and even earlier this year, it's like, wow, everything's right around the same speed. That's dangerous. And then, I don't know if anything has changed, or is just the success different? Is the location different? What have you seen? Because, boy, it's been good.
I think he's two things. I think the cutter and to the lefties has been a good weapon for him. And I think early in maybe last year, he was making some more mistakes with that pitch and leaving it out over the plate, and lefties were doing some damage on it. I think he's gotten better about having the ability to throw that ball in on their hands and having the confidence to throw it in there. And J-Mo's, the more I watch him, the more I appreciate him. He's a percentage pitcher. And what I mean by that is, when you take the broad view, he throws a ton of strikes, a lot of first pitch strikes, pounds the strike zone. So every now and then he's going to have a game where he just gives it up, where he's throwing it over so much, and you're thinking, well, I wish he'd be a little more particular. I wish he'd be a little less aggressive. But it has a negative impact in that game. And then you watch the next 5 starts, and you go, okay, I get it. He's throwing a ton of strikes. He's getting quick outs. The ball's in play early. He's efficient. It allows him to pitch deep into games. And I think that's what we've seen play out over the course of the last couple of years now. You've seen this whole body of work where, and especially early last year, there was some really ugly outings. And And then it just all the strike throwing has paid off. And again, the cutter in and the breaking stuff has been really good. He's just a good, solid major league pitcher.
Last thing for you, Jim. This is random. I know, but Randy Johnson was being asked. I love talking about pitching and guys from our shared past. Randy Johnson was being asked about the bird that he hit. And where's this from, Sean? Where did you grab this from?
This is from Diamondbacks broadcast. Actually, this is him getting interviewed in the booth.
Okay.
People go, hey, aren't you the pitcher that hit the bird?
That's it, right?
And I look at him and I go, I played 22 years and I've done a lot more than just kill a bird.
I got to say, that'd be the first thing I ask him about, though, as well. How about you?
Yeah, well, isn't that part of that interview or somewhere I saw? He's a photographer now.
Yes.
And I think the logo for his company is like a bird with its feathers flying off of it or something like that, because he blew up that bird. I mean, yeah, I don't know if it's the first thing I ask him, but it's definitely coming up in the conversation.
Oh, for sure.
If it doesn't, he walks out of your studio or out of our booth and you're looking, why didn't we ask him about the bird? You got to talk to him about the bird.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, he might enjoy it if you don't ask him about the bird, but how do you not?
Have to ask him about the bird.
Yeah, I would ask him, too, about – this would be the end of the conversation. I'd ask him about the night that he and Jack McDowell got in a fight at a Soundgarden show at a Seattle nightclub. But I think that probably ends the conversation. So
I don't know, but you might get some good stuff there.
That's right.
I wasn't familiar with that story.
Oh, yeah.
He was with us in Houston when I was working down there years ago, 98. You may recall they traded for him. And he went like 10-1 with a 190 something ERA. It was just brilliant. And wow. Bagwell used to tell the story how, and we didn't, we weren't giving him run support for whatever reason. And pitchers, they get mad when that happens. And Baggy said that Randy used to just scream at everybody in the dugout, let's go, get some runs, come on, shake yourself. And finally, Jeff went up to him after one of the games, hey, Randy, would you mind yelling at us when we're not facing Kevin Brown, when we have a fighting chance, feel free to yell at us then. But when Kevin Brown's out there, no yelling allowed.
I forgot that, of course, that you're broadcasting the Astros game. That's one of the all time deadline deals. I still remember it was Freddie Garcia, Carlos Guillen, and John Halama. Was the trade. How and what effect did you see that have on that Astros team?
Well, like I said, he pitched brilliantly. And it was one of those things that everybody was all in on. And, Jerry Hunsicker pulled off the deal and the whole city was going crazy. And then he lived up to the deal. It was obviously they gave away a lot of talent, but he was brilliant. Tried to re-sign him, and obviously that didn't work out. But there was kind of a big unit mania going on in Houston at the time. They were selling like this 2-foot-long hot dog called the Big Unit Dog or something like that. So, yeah, it was a really good team that they got eliminated by the Padres in the LCS.
Jim Deshaies, thanks for the time. Even when you're off for the series, you're a good man. Appreciate it. See you around.
Always good to be with Spigs.
All right, buddy. It's Jim Deshaies right there from the Marquee Sports Network. Okay, we haven't taken a single call yet. It's a Sunday morning. I love talking to you people. There's a wide variety of topics on the table that have already been discussed. But let me go ahead and set the table as we open the phone line for you. Even though I said there are topics on the table, let me put them in a good particular order. For the White Sox fans, where are you? Any excitement at the idea of A.J. Pierzynski as your manager next year for a new batch of kids that are brought in via trade as well as the pieces that you're seeing? So is there excitement there? Also, I want to know, is there any part of you that would like to see them break the record for the Mets and the worst season in MLB history? Any part of you that wants to see them go ahead and get that done? I'm interested in that. Obviously, your trade deadline stuff as well. For the Cubs, any part of you that is with Rick Sutcliffe saying that it's now or never?
Well, it's just my opinion, but tonight, it's now or never.
Yeah, I mean, never kind of is in the lead. Now, I thought had left town, but Sut is still believing in now. So, any part of you that believes in that? And then here's another one for Cubs fans. Is there anybody you're willing to trade at this point that you weren't even considering as somebody you would have wanted to trade a month ago? So now that you look, okay, if we're really going to try and shake up this mix, I guess I would trade X. I want to know who's in your thoughts on that. So wide array of topics, phone lines wide open. Let's chat. Let's talk baseball on a Sunday morning on Hit and Run. 312-644-6767. Be listening to 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Listen, the farther and farther I get away from 2005, the more and more I appreciate A.J. Pierzynski and what he did and how he played and what he brought. A.J.'s a bright kid, a bright guy. You could put it in a lot of other people's hands. It wouldn't be as fast. I like the idea, is what I'm saying. I like the idea that you just brought up.
That is Don Cooper in a visit with Parkins and Spiegel from 2022 on the idea of A.J. Pierzynski as a manager. If you are just joining us or have not read Bob Nightingale today, here it is in the USA Today from this morning. Former All-Star catcher A.J. Pierzynski has quietly emerged as a serious candidate to manage the Chicago White Sox in 2025 if they dismiss manager Pedro Grifol after the season, as expected. And A.J. on with Mully and Haw in April said, that would be fun. Haven't been asked, but that would be fun. I'd enjoy that. I like my jobs I have now, blah, 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 blah. Sounded like a guy who would take the job if he was offered the job. Interesting. Your thoughts on that, on many other White Sox topics, on Cubs topics as well. We've asked for phone calls, and boy, do we have phone calls. I love talking to you on a Sunday morning. Let's start with Mark in South Bend on The Score. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Spiegs? Always great to chime in with you. I got a few things. It's going to take me about 20 seconds to explain, and I'll listen to your answer. New York Yankee announcer job on radio, I would say Len Casper might be lined up for an interview on that one. I say with A.J. going to the White Sox, I would not jump on it for a couple years. As a matter of fact, A.J. might have chances to manage at other places, maybe even for the Cubs in 4 or 5 years. If Mr. Counselor don't work out. Now, the last thing is, Tom Hamilton, your good associates with the Cleveland Indians play-by-play announcer, did you ever ask him when the Cleveland Guardians changed their name from the Indians, how was that decided? And why would you not in Cleveland, is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as you well know, and they should have named themselves the Cleveland Rockers.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark, for your collection of thoughts. I'm a no on Casper to the Yankees. There's no association, and he loves living here. I'm a no on A.J. ever managing the Cubs because he doesn't like that place. I just don't think that's a fit. And on the Guardians, I forget. There is something. There's something related to Cleveland, but it's neither here nor there. But thank you for your thoughts and your call and your listenership. Owen is in Willowbrook and is now on The Score. Good morning, Owen.
Hey, Matt, a couple answers to your questions. It wouldn't bother me if the Sox, broke the Mets' old record because it would just highlight the fact that this current ownership, and I'm not going to put it on guests, but how incompetent they've been. And I think A.J. Pierzynski, who was the smartest baseball player on that 2005 team, would be perfect. And it would remind me of the fact that he was like Ozzy. Ozzy knew baseball better than anybody in that organization. And he forced Kenny Williams' hand to go get Scott Pesednik.
Yep.
And I don't think A.J. would want to just wait 5 years for a rebuild. The Texas Rangers last year won the World Series. The year before, they finished 28 games under 500. We need ownership to get lit, have something lit underneath them. And A.J. Pierzynski would do it.
All right, look, let's talk about the A.J. part, and I think you make a great point that the Sox need guys that are smarter than the organization to come in, and that has been true for front office people, but they don't usually do that. They usually promote from within. I love Brian Bannister. I think that guy's awesome, and I think things are looking up for the overall pitching outlook for the entire organization, in part because of Brian Bannister. AJ as a comp for Ozzy, hell yes, with the attitude and the edge and the smarter than the org, probably at this point, been a national broadcaster now, foul territory has turned into an amazing thing very, very quickly, talking to a lot of people around the game, knows a lot of stuff, and of course played at a high level for a bunch of different organizations, and he would challenge Chris Getz. I mean, the Aussie comp to Kenny Williams in terms of the relationship piece is a really clean one for AJ and Chris Getz. Now, in terms of doing something quickly and daring to reference the Texas Rangers, that team spent half a billion dollars on Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. And the next year spent like $300 million on Jacob deGrom and John Gray and Nate Eovaldi, and I could have the timing wrong. I know they spent nearly $1 billion in combined contracts on some heavy, heavy hitters and then won the World Series. That's not the model. That's not the model. But in terms of the quickness of a turnaround, it's certainly something to consider that it can be done perhaps a little quicker than the lengthy rebuild that we have seen in the past. I mean, it's nice to dream on, but it's hard to do. It's very hard to do. But that, I think, will lead us to this conversation I've been dreading with Ron from the South Side. I've been dreading talking to you, Ron. I've been dreading it, my friend. Ron, good morning. You're on Hitting
Run. Hey, good morning, Speed. Going out to see Gary Crochet today, hopefully for the last time.
See, yeah, for those who don't know, yeah, yes, Gary Crochet pitching today. And Ron has been calling me every week to try and tell me that they should trade Gary Crochet, trying to change my mind on Gary Crochet, right?
Right. Yeah. And I keep trying. And so hope, like I said, this will be his. But I did want to ask you, though. Oh, and first of all, regarding AJ Pizzis, no.
Yeah.
No.
Well, okay, tell me why no.
Because, you know, I want an experienced manager. We just went through this, and I hear all the descriptions of he's very smart. It reminds me of Grifol, that he was a great communicator. I want to see someone with some manager experience. Now, bring him on as a coach. And then, okay, but no. And then it's just a lot of antics. No. I don't want him. Another one, Ozzie back. None of that. Time to move on. So, but I wanted to ask you, because you might get your way. Does it complicate things with Crochet now that he has said that he wants an extension, even though, you know, he can't deny a trade, block a trade? So maybe just comment on that. How do you think that's complete? I do think it may complicate things, but he can't block a trade and can't make those kind of demands. He can ask, but it doesn't have to be given. So maybe you can comment on that for me, Steve.
Thanks, Ron. It's a big-time complication. It absolutely is, because it was referenced as a complication over the past couple months in kind of abstract terms. You remember this, and people would be like, well, it's hard to tell you know, what kind of value there is for Crochet, because you don't know whether he will be able to pitch in September and October, because he's never done this. And maybe they'd have to turn him into a reliever and that kind of stuff. And then it became, all right, no, maybe teams will trade it because they could turn him into a reliever and use him like Andrew Miller during this run. And then he could be a starter again next year and all of that. But then Crochet's camp that has now said that if he's traded, he'd like to have a contract extension. And that if he is traded, not only does he want a contract extension, but he won't pitch in the postseason if he doesn't get an extension. And as Nightingale writes today, you can imagine the White Sox's rage, considering they had not been informed of that demand until it became public. So the Sox didn't know that Crochet was saying that to anybody until he leaked it, till his agent leaked it to the media? Wow. Wow, that is a power play of the highest order from a baseball pitcher. And now teams are scared off. But Nightingale writes, teams like the Dodgers are unfazed, and they wonder if it's nothing more than a negotiating ploy. You really think Crochet is going to walk into a clubhouse and say, sorry, boys, I'm sitting this one out? So teams are assuming that Crochet will bend to the will of teammates on a new team, even if he talks a big game as a negotiating ploy. That is, it's a lot to assume for any kind of acquiring team. I could see it not scaring the Dodgers, thinking that, look, he's not going to get here, and Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Shohei are looking at you. But if you're the Orioles, do you wonder whether Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman pack the same power? They might, but they might not. You're really going to give up the farm, the entire farm, according to Lou Kanellis, for a guy that you then have to pressure and convince? I think he's still going to get traded. And I got to tell you, Ron, this is why I was dreading the phone call, because I understand, and I would begrudgingly accept Crochet being traded more than I would have last week or the week before. I've been worn down a little bit. I'm not all the way there, but I'm pretty damn close to being there to say, okay, fine. And I'll tell you why. I got a couple different reasons when we come back. We'll keep taking your phone calls for much of the rest of Hit and Run. So dial it up and get involved if you want it. 312-644-6767. But when we come back, hear from a White Sox legend in the booth on the trade deadline, and I'll explain to you why I am weakening with my stance of not wanting them to trade Crochet, who I do believe is an ace that you have drafted and unleashed. But we'll talk about it next, and more of your phone calls on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Have you seen, I know you worked with Andrew Vaughn this offseason. I saw you brought him over to your house and you had a nice hitting session with him. Have you seen anything out of him or any of these White Sox hitters that are going to be around? Like, they're not going to trade an Andrew Vaughn, you know, Brooks Baldwin, the second baseman, or you know, even probably Luis Robert Jr. But is there anything you look for in young hitters to say, they got a chance to be something special?
Well, he's been swinging it great. I mean, he's going on probably a good 30 or 40 game clip of swinging it really, really well.
It's Paul Konerko in the booth on Fox yesterday with AJ Pruszynski talking about the White Sox. All right, I want to hear this. It's Matt Spiegler with you. Your call's coming. My admission of a bend on the Crochet thing in a minute. Let's hear from Paul Konerko on whether he would trade Crochet and Robert at this deadline for the woefully horrific Chicago White Sox.
Would you, as a fan, do you want him to trade Crochet? Do you want him to trade Luis Robert Jr.? Do you want him to trade Eric Fetty, who's pitching tonight?
I think as a knowledgeable fan, looking at where the team's at and looking what you could probably get for those guys in the form of bona fide, you know, young players that are probably under a lot of team control that you can bring in here that are, you know, just about ready to go and be good big leaguers. I think, you know, I would because possibly, like I said, I think they can be good. Even if it's in a year from now or 2 years from now, Crochet is still a young guy and he could be a big part of that. But if it were to take longer, I mean, again, just looking at it from a fan's perspective, is by the time they would be getting good, he would be kind of going out the door. So what good is that? You might as well capitalize on it now. But this is why they pay Getsy the big bucks, you know. But I think the name of it is, if you look at teams, again, as a fan, I watch a lot of baseball. You're looking to get, like, dynamic, athletic players, you know, that you look at all these teams that are doing well, and if you you know, if you bring in guys that look like that, you know, you can start to build on that. And it's definitely a puzzle to figure out, but that's where it's at now, and you just gotta, you know, roll up your sleeves and get it done.
So Paul Konerko would do it. here's the sad reality that I've come to sit with this week.
But you're disagreeing with Paul Konerko?
No, that doesn't feel great. He's a thoughtful guy. The thing is, because I've said the reasons why I would not trade Crochet, because I believe he is an ace. I believe that, yes, they should pay him, and he's probably the only one of those young pitchers you'll have to pay. And I believe he's got all the intangibles as well as the tangibles about being being a real true ace, and there's nothing more valuable than that. But you're at a deadline here where there's very few active sellers who are going to be willing to give up somebody that good. Like, he's number one. He is number one. Because I don't think the Tigers are going to trade Tariq Skubal because they feel like they're closer. Hell, they might even, you know, have a shot this year. So he is far and away number one. But here's the real the truth that sunk into me. It takes a lot longer than it used to do a rebuild in MLB. It, you know, we used to think, oh, 5 years, the perfect Cubs plan of 5 years. The Astros, I think, took six. But even that, you're like, oh, look at that. But now with the way the draft has changed, I mean, go back to when the Nationals were tanking and they used number one overall picks on Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg, eventually won a World Series. Go back to when the Astros were tanking and they used a number one overall on Carlos Correa. Go back to when the Cubs were tanking and they used a number two pick on Chris Bryant and a number four pick on Kyle Schwarber. And those guys helped them win a World Series. And now understand that the White Sox might break the record for the worst record ever, and they pick 10th next year. And I've thought about that in a one-year sample, but I don't think I really gave that full context and thought in terms of a five-year rebuild now becoming maybe a seven-year rebuild, because that's how the world can work and how much smarter you have to be. I mean, even just this year, Hagan Smith was what, number five overall? And it's a different guarantee than having number one overall. It's a different ceiling. And I think I got to admit that they're really far away, and I knew that, but that they're even further away because of the systemic change to the game that has come at a tough time for them. So with that confluence of factors, very few aggressive GMs, very few GMs with jewels as good as Crochet, and the fact that it takes longer, I think I'd have to bite the bullet and do it. And I would hope that the Orioles would give you three athletic high-end position players. One that's ready like Heston Kjerstad, one that's a little lower like Samuel Basalo, and then one that's way lower but still gets something. Go ahead and get three position players of potential consequence. If you can get that, I guess I'd probably do it. And I'm grumpy about having caved a bit here. I'm grumpy. I don't like it. I do like taking your phone calls. Don is in Tinley Park on 670 The Score. Good morning, Don. You're on Hit and Run.
Hi, Spiggs. Maybe I'll cheer you up a little bit with this trade proposal.
Okay.
The Cubs have 7 to 8 top 100 prospects, mostly in the upper half, a few in the bottom half of the 100. But regardless, you could do a 6 for 2, and you could steal Luis Robert and Crochet, bench Crochet for the rest of the year, because now you could be able to trade Cade Horton and give Cade Horton to the White Sox. Yeah, I know he's hurt, but is his injury unsustainable? He's not coming back? Or
What do you think about that? I think he'll be back. I think that you are excited, and you are ravenous here at the deadline, and you, my friend, might be a spirit animal of Jerry DePoto and A.J. Preller. Trade 6 prospects for Crochet and Robert. Here's the thing. I don't want Luis Robert. If I'm the Cubs, I don't want Luis Robert. That is a guy, woo, does he chase, and he will forever chase. Sometimes he forgets to throw the ball in when the winning run is about to score from third base. Sometimes he doesn't bother to make a throw like that. Doesn't even get under the ball correctly. Okay? That's not somebody I'm interested in. Good for you. Have some fun. Sean, would you like to respond about the 6 for 2 trade?
I mean, Don did preface it by saying I might be crazy before he told me it.
Okay, want him to stop there?
I agreed. Okay. But, you know, it was fun. I enjoyed it.
All right. Let's go to John in O'Fallon, Illinois on 670 The Score. Hello, John.
Hey, hello. How are you doing?
Wonderful.
Okay. What I wanted to ask about is more your thoughts on this. AJ Pierzynski comes in as a manager. You have your general manager's on his second year. You made the comment how Ozzie pushed back on his general manager. I think AJ might run over his general manager. And the problem is the ownership doesn't get rid of guys. So will they keep Chris Getz, or will AJ come in and look around and say, hey, I need really need somebody else to work with? And then all of a sudden the owner goes, well, that's not how we do it here. We let guys stay here for a while.
Yeah, no, I don't think they would do that. I don't think that Chris Getz would be in danger if AJ comes in. I mean, look, the manager is not, should not be atop the food chain for the White Sox. It should be a baseball boss. It's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, you could see that kind of coup being tried theoretically, but more than likely you get guys who know each other and are going to argue about stuff, and that's good. That's healthy. It was good that Ozzie and Kenny pushed back on each other. That's good. I think one of the smaller problems on the Cubs this year is the loss of David Ross pushing back on Jed in terms of two-strike approach and stuff like that. You know, I don't know how much counsel's pushing back on Jed, and maybe he will do it more as we go on here, but I don't know. To me, it seems like you've got an overall offensive approach of you wait for the three-run homer, wait for the three-run homer, when, you know, you need some dudes in a lineup who can scrape and scrap their way on base.
But then you also end up with, like, Eric Hosmer on the roster for, like, maybe a couple months longer than you want him to.
Right? That's true. That's true. So there's negatives. There's negatives in that regard. And there's negatives in terms of playing time, in terms of a manager not being on the same page. So I get it. I get it, but you do want to. You need a certain amount of pushback. It's a delicate balance. So I don't know. It'd be interesting. I'm sure it would be fun to watch. I bet Joe Cali would want to get back on the White Sox beat because he documented the Ozzie and Kenny stuff. Oh boy, he picked a dog in that fight and documented that. That kind of fight would be available again with AJ and Getz. It could be entertaining. Look, I haven't fully capitulated on the Garrett Crochet thing, okay? It's not a full capitulation. I'm just saying I see the wisdom now. I understand.
These caveats, okay.
I'm struggling, okay?
It's okay.
Some score colleagues are texting me and chiding me for not holding my ground in full. It's a complicated sport, people. It's complicated. It's nuanced. Sometimes new information becomes available. Sometimes new callers are available, and we'll be engaged in conversation next hour right here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.